Elektroauto News. Der Podcast rund um das Thema Elektromobilität. Mit aktuellen Entwicklungen, Diskussionen, Interviews und vielem mehr.
Servus und herzlich willkommen bei einer neuen Folge des Elektroauto News.net Podcast. Ich bin Sebastian, freue mich, dass du heute mit am Start bist. Auf der anderen Seite des Mikrofons sitzt heute Daniel Jimenez-Schuster, seines Zeichens Managing Partner und Mitgründer von Eli Markets, einem Unternehmen, was sich auf die Lithium-Industrie fokussiert. Er selbst bringt einiges an Erfahrung mit, war mehrere Jahrzehnte in diesem Umfeld aktiv, vornehmlich bei SQM in verschiedenen Rollen und berät nun strategisch mit seinem Unternehmen Produzenten, Abnehmer, Investoren und Regierungen weltweit. Er hat ein wenig hinter die Kulissen blicken lassen, was es damit auf sich hat, welche Chancen Europa gegen China noch hat, wenn es um das Thema Batterie, Lithium und all damit verwandten Themen zu tun hat. Und genau darüber habe ich mich mit ihm länger ausgetauscht. Du bekommst die Einblicke darauf. Heute ausnahmsweise in Englisch, was eben der Herkunft von Daniel geschuldet ist. Ich hoffe dennoch, dass du einiges mitnehmen kannst. Erweitert dazu gibt es das Ganze aber auch übersetzt bei uns im Portal auf Deutsch. Dir schon mal vorab vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und nun viel Spaß mit der aktuellen Folge.
Hi Daniel, thank you for taking your time talking with us about lithium. And you're one of the experts in this field of lithium, especially since you're long in this game, to be open. And now you have your own company, Eli Markets, in this topic about lithium. Would you tell us a little bit more about you, about Eli Markets, what you're doing in your daily business?
Well, thank you, Sebastian, for inviting me to this interview. So I have been in the lithium industry since the late 90s. I am Chilean. I worked for SQM all my professional career as employee. Within those roles in SQM, I assumed from the early stages roles in the commercial area, introducing SQM's lithium where we were starting in the late 90s. In Europe and Asia, the first production of lithium hydroxide in Russia. And so on, the whole birth of the lithium-ion battery industry in Japan, following it through Korea and China parallel. In SQM, I held several positions, but in two periods, I was senior VP commercial, responsible for the lithium business, commercial side, for 10 years in total. In between, I was 6-7 years senior VP of exploration. So I also got exposure to resources and to exploration and to looking for opportunities in the lithium space. At that time, we wanted to outgrow Atacama. I've left SQM 2019 and started Eli Markets, which is the lithium focused consulting firm we're working on today. We have essentially a deep understanding of the industry, both on the supply and demand side. We are very analytic. We use a lot of data and sources. And we basically provide our clients with an overview or a review of the market supply, demand, the future. We try to predict what's going to happen in this industry. That on the one end, then we have a line of work which is more strategic advisory, helping companies take off when they are lithium producers or want to become lithium producers, a little bit to help them find their way, find niches for clients, negotiate contracts, structure those contracts. And on the other hand, we have also clients who are lithium consumers who are trying to better buy lithium, are trying to find new or future suppliers. So we also help them in making those connections. And finally, we also have a leg which we use on special advisories with this more technical related. We build that due diligence teams to look into assets when clients of us want either to take an equity position or want to finance an asset and they need to have certainty about what they're getting into. We do then that whole technical due diligence. And for that, we basically build up teams with experts, which we have worked with in our past lives, from geology to mining to processing, engineering, and so on. So that's a little bit of background on what we do here.
So just like I said, you're one of the experts in the lithium field, which you also laid down for us here with your cases, which you're working for, with the clients you're working for. If you look at lithium from the German OEM side, from Germany politician, we always hear about there's a risk of supply of lithium, which we need here. We need it to get our batteries on the road in the BEVs, for example. But I know from your perspective, this is not thought about much enough. It's not only about getting the material into Germany. It's more what we do with it here. And if it's necessary to secure material for us here, or why we should force another way to go there. Could you explain it a little bit more? I think this was also something which you looked at it with ED Market.
Yeah, look, this is not a problem particular to Germany, nor to Europe, nor to the US. It's all over the world that the problem we're going to point out. And that's essentially the know-how in cell manufacturing. And that know-how is also coupled with cost of producing cells. China has built such a big advantage in the production of cells because of technology, because of scale, that it becomes very difficult for non-Chinese companies, including Koreans really, to compete in the battery space today with Chinese. And because of that, we see very limited production of cells in Europe and North America. And because of that, we see very limited production of cathode material. And because of that, there's a very limited need of lithium chemicals in these regions, right? So when I think about Europe and the US and the strategic need to have a domestic supply chain, I think that need will only arise when and if Europe and the US are capable of being efficient cell manufacturers, because that's what's going to trigger all the upstream. And the upstream will follow the downstream. It's not the other way around. Today, Tesla is completing a lithium refinery in the US. Well, not clear yet, but it's most likely that whatever lithium they produce in the US, they will have to ship to Korea, right? Similar thing at another scale would happen in Europe, right? So until Europe and the US haven't solved the problem of building cells in locally, and with that triggering the need for domestic CAM material, cathode active material, well, without that, it is unlikely that the need of a integrated supply chain is so important.
But you're getting down for our listeners here. You talked about upstream and downstream. Could you explain a little bit what is meant with it for people which doesn't have the expertise just like you?
Yeah. Well, in the battery on the automotive supply chain, you essentially, when you go from the downstream, which is, let's say, EVs, and you start to move upstream in the battery supply chain, you have evidently the batteries, the cells. Before that, when we speak about lithium, you have the cathode. And before that, you have lithium chemicals. And even before that, lithium concentrate. So that's the supply chain as we move upstream. The upstream today, so the mining and production of concentrate, is today heavily concentrated in countries like Australia, Chile, Argentina, of course, some Brazil, some Africa, and so on, China as well. But from that perspective, the supply of lithium to the West is more or less secure because of basically Australia, Chile, Argentina being allies of the Western world, right? So I think there's no reason for concern on that end. Now, what is to me a reason of concern is that in that whole supply chain, Europe is not capable of producing cells in an efficient way. And I would say this is not that of necessarily because of incompetence. It's simply that Europe also made a bet which went wrong, right? And that bet was NMC cells, right? NMC are cells where the cathode is nickel, cobalt, manganese, of course, with some lithium. And China made a bet on LFP, which is lithium iron phosphate cathode material. The advantage of the first is that it has a high energy density. The advantage of the second is that it's lower cost. So China bet on a lower cost technology, whereas Europe said no and the US no for our fancy cars. We need high energy density. Well, the Chinese developed LFP and were little by little capable of increasing the energy density of those batteries, effectively narrowing the performance gap, if you want, but keeping a very significant cost advantage. And that is basically put off any of the Western developments, including Koreans, by the way, and Japanese, and put China in control of the battery space. All stationary storage batteries are today produced with LFP. Right? Most of them, not everything, evidently. So the West also made a mistake in terms of the technology they bet on and probably underestimated the capacities Chinese industry has to improve what they were working on. Right? And that's the situation today where we're starting to see Western OEMs who 3 years ago would have not talked about LFP. Today they're all talking about going into LFP. The whole portfolio of cell factories, announced cell factories in the West, there were very few LFP. Now many of the NMC's cells are being converted, factories are being converted to LFP. But basically the West lost 5 years. I must give credit though to Tesla. Tesla was the first Western company who adopted LFP. Followed very closely by Volkswagen, who, with an early acquisition stake at Gotion, did also something very novel at that time. And but I would say the bulk of Western OEMs simply dismissed LFP as a no-go until very recently.
And you said it before, this is one of the main problems. We are not getting ahead here, especially not of allocating resources like lithium or other materials. It's more the problem to getting the battery know-how here in Europe and also to get, I think it strategically right, the way to go. So from your perspective, China saw also, I think, sort of problems with LFP, but they say, okay, we will start here and we'll go further or we'll be getting better year for year with learning about the process, about the materials, how to use it and get more density, energy density in it. And took another path which seemed longer in hindsight of Europe, but they get away further because they had the know-how in backhand. This is what I take from your excursus here. But the question which I ask for myself, does Europe and US have a chance to get on the same level like China, or is China just too far ahead for us right now?
I would think that China has also another big advantage today, and that's scale, right? So I think it's very difficult for the West to catch up with China, at least in this generation of batteries, right? So I guess the best option for the West is to bring in Chinese companies to manufacture cells in Europe and the US. And at least by doing so, be able to build a upstream supply chain, upstream from cells. So cathode industry, a chemical industry, lithium chemical industry, and essentially those are the two elements where the West could, I think, still participate. But with this generation of cells, probably the scale and then the years of advantage China has is will be probably very difficult to catch up.
So just to be open about this, so we are thinking about KTL, which are planned to come here to Europe, build up their battery industry here. And just like the Chinese learned from our OEMs how to build cars,
we should learn from them directly how to build batteries, cathodes, and so on, all this way down.
Yeah, I would think particularly cells. Cathode is probably less of a mystery, although there are evidently secrets, but it's particularly cells where the West. And if the West doesn't produce it, it doesn't make any sense to make any upstream, because it ends up everything going to China. You know that 92% of the lithium units mined in 2025 ended up going to China, re-exported then in another way, but 92%. It tells you a little bit how strong the position of China is compared to the West. And by the way, the other 7-8% went primarily to Japan and Korea. So that's the other place where cells are produced. So the dominance of China, the scale, the know-how is simply, I think, too far away already to make it worth even to try to make an effort to catch up.
Well, this is hard to swallow, to be fair, to hear that transparent from your side, but I understand it. You said we should work on the actual battery generation right now. We should team up with Chinese companies just to get the expertise in cells and to work on the next generation of batteries. Will in the next generation of batteries lithium play a role, or will we see other chemicals getting inside?
I mean, yes, lithium, because of where it is at the periodic table, will always have a very important role in batteries, which doesn't mean that they are substitutes or like sodium, which could do the job. Lithium ion does, not as well as a lithium ion, but they could do it on some other type of technologies as well. But yeah, I would say the next probably big jump and where the West could maybe catch up with China, although the Chinese are working also heavily in it, is it in the lithium sulfur battery, where there's solid, which is a solid state battery now, but where lithium is part of the anode, and it's a lithium metal composite anode that will have a significantly higher energy density than the current generations of LFP on NMC. This could open the possibility of batteries being used in other industries where today they're not being used. And so maybe that's the route to go for the West, right? But we're talking 6, 7, 8 years from today.
Yeah, and to get there in 6, 7, 8 years from today, we just should make the steps right now. But if I take a look at these steps which we're taking right now from the industry and also especially from the politician side, it's just not going the right way. If I see it here in Germany, especially, or in Europe at whole, we're supporting pilot projects, mines, getting materials out of the Rheingraben, for example, and putting money in there, in this project, to get lithium out of it. But we don't have the industry behind. So wouldn't it be better to put the money, the funds, more into the industry and get this forward? For me, the answer seems very clear. I think for you too, or?
Yes, no, I totally agree with you. It's the bottleneck here is not lithium. The bottleneck is cell manufacturing, and then moving upstream. And again, in terms of lithium resources globally, I mean, you don't need to produce everything domestically if you have allies or jurisdictions which are friendly or stable, where you can source the material. The priority should be, from a public funding point of view, I think, be put in the downstream and not in the upstream.
I understand this point, but if we're looking at programs such as Resource EU, which aim to de-risk investments, for example, through price guarantees or support instruments, does this seem helpful from this point of view, or should there be other ways which we are going inside to put Europe some steps ahead?
Look, if you have unlimited resources, yes, you can do everything. But I presume that the resources are not unlimited. And if you have limited resources, then you need to allocate them where the real priorities are. And at least in my opinion, priorities are not in the extraction, in the mining, priorities to me are on the technological side, on the downstream. Europe doesn't have any advantage in mining or in extracting lithium because its resources are poor, difficult, high cost. So why invest in that when you have plenty of possibilities? I mean, you have Australia. Australia could not be a closer ally to Europe and to the US. You could say, no, South America is risky, Chile, Argentina, but as a matter of fact, for the last 100 years, they've been allies of the West, or 200 years, right? So it doesn't make too much sense for me, really.
Just like I said before, it's hard to swallow for us to get this right, this perspective. What I don't understand, if it seemed that crystal clear, and I think also politicians or countries are asking for your advice, or OEMs, clients, which also have the speaking with different countries and should get the impulse there. Why doesn't see Germany, Europe the problem and say, okay, we should shift our funds, which are limited, just like you said, more into the direction to get forward in industry programs and technology and not in getting lithium out of the earth?
I cannot speak for what is probably in the mind of the legislators, but what I have seen, and also in this part of the world, the lobby groups are very influential. Eh? And here we have evidently the groups, for example, DLE developers. This is a very strong lobbying group with a pseudo-environmental support or arguments claiming that DLEs are more environmentally friendly. And they have been able through, and there are many of them, by the way, but through they have been able through lobby to influence legislations in South America, in Europe. And I think that's part of it. And I could imagine similar things happen with more populist politicians who say, no, if we bring this here, we are safer, we are more secure, we bring employment and that. But again, here, to me, the bottom line is, where do I allocate limited resources the best, the better way? Right? It makes no sense for Europe to produce lithium or extract lithium at a high cost if later on it will have to send it to China anyway and pay the same price a low-cost producer from somewhere else is receiving.
It should be crystal clear. Just to go into the DLE technology, which you mentioned before, this is different on different kinds of lithium production. If we're talking about brine, geothermal, or hard rock, there are different DLE technologies are used. How I see it, as not the expert of lithium, just like you are, but if we could use this, what are the implications of the technology for the value chain afterwards? Are we able to get costs down? Is China able to get their cost even more down to go even more ahead in the race of batteries then?
Yeah, look, how I see DLE, and you have to think of DLE as a way to extract lithium from brines containing lithium. And if you look at the brines globally, you have like kind of three groups. You have the salares, which are primarily in Chile, Argentina, the US, you have some in Silver Peak, right? And these are salt flats, which are naturally in places where there are high evaporation rates. And that's how lithium, those brines have been concentrated historically through solar evaporation with an extremely low CO2 footprint, energy of the sun, but with the being blamed for evaporating or using big surfaces in evaporating water, which is something I dispute, but that we can leave for another day. Then you have geothermal brines, which is like the one you have in the Rhine, like the ones you have in Salton Sea in the US. And geothermal brines have their story because they are also very corrosive. So a type of brine to which I think it's not so easy to extract lithium from it. And then you have other brines, which are generally very deep brines and many places related to oil deposits or oil and gas deposits, where lithium concentrations vary, but in general, they're very low. But even if they're not very low or they're even higher, they cannot be concentrated through solar evaporation because of their locations, right? So that's where DLE jumps in as a technical possibility to produce lithium, extract lithium out of this type of brines. At what historic lithium prices have been, probably DLEs for this type of brines are high cost, right? But looking into the future, and with a demand of lithium reaching 3 million tons and then 5 million tons and even 6 million tons, well, the marginal cost of production is going to go up. And by that time, these DLE technologies will have most likely a space if they remain in a total cost range of below $15, let's say, right? And I would say that is the condition under which these technologies will or might be economically feasible and might develop. Production potentials, on paper at least, are extremely high. And they will most likely long term be the marginal cost producer, most likely. Right? So I'm not saying don't do it, let's not start from a hypothesis that they will be low cost. They're going to be high cost, right? And that's what we need to wait for some technological breakthrough to happen. You have important companies in the Smackover Formation. You have Standard Lithium with Equinor. You have ExxonMobil. You have Chevron. You have also in Germany. Two or three projects also there trying to develop technologies. Eventually, or maybe someone of them will succeed. But I think we should not live under the hope that it's going to be low cost.
Yeah, and I also understand, even if we're getting it to work on a lower cost, some years in the future, it's not the problem solution for us, because the industry which we talked about before is still missing here. So even the lowest price of lithium out of Germany or Europe wouldn't be the solution to get ahead or near China.
No, because today you would have to ship it to China anyway.
And from the lithium price perspective, which we saw in the last months, lithium prices were going up and up. Will this be also the future case? You mentioned the amount of lithium which will be needed in the future to build the batteries and to use in the industry, or will we see there a plateau of the prices also?
Yeah, well, lithium prices will be dictated by demand and supply. We do see the demand going from 1.4 million tons last year to 3 million tons by the end of the decade, or even more by 2030. And then probably peaking somewhere around 2040 at 5 to 5.5 million tons. Right? So when you put that into perspective, and you think about 2025, where marginal cost producers to supply this 1.4 million tons was probably $12. Right? That's variable cost of production. One-third of the industry lost money last year, and if not more. So that tells you that those and average prices during the year are probably $10, so $12 is a reasonable number to think as a marginal cost of production. If we go to 3 million tons, well, it's very unlikely that the marginal cost of production will not go up to $16, $18, right? And not to speak when we go to 4 or 5 million tons. So directionally, I think prices or this hike we have seen is correct. It's going into this direction where we envision average long-term prices of somewhere in the range of $18. Right? Now, in the more shorter term, we do see a deficit starting in 2027. We're seeing a deficit starting in 2027. And this started to be felt already at the end of last year, with inventories measured in month of consumption going down. And the market reacts pre-acts when it's out to Seattle. And I think part of this price run we have had now has been an inventory buildup, taking advantage of the low prices we are coming from. And today or yesterday or this week, we saw a price decrease in the Shanghai Metal Exchange, or sorry, in the Guangzhou Futures Exchange. But it's something which we're also saying, look, directionally, we're in the right direction. This might be an overreaction. We might see corrections in the short term. But I would say directionally, towards the end of the year, we should see prices going up. And by 2027, at the latest, I think we could have an important price run. And this is because price signal today is already correct. All of the projects were idled have been started to be, studies made to restart them. And they will most likely happen quickly. But that will be not enough over the next 2 years, because basically we had 2 years of zero, not zero, I always exaggerate, but very low capital deployment in project executions. So we have basically lost years and 2 years as an industry. The catch up will come, but it will be too late in order to avoid a price run. So that's why we do think that by 2027 latest, we could see a price run. Could prices go to $30? Yes. That's within the possibilities, right? And that's essentially towards the end of the decade, these new price levels will make funds available for execution of projects, and we will eventually, the supply is going to be there, right? It's not that we see that supply is not going to come, but it's going to take longer to come, right? But then we will need assets to operate, which will be higher cost than those what we had operating last year.
Bring our topic here to the end. I think this would be the question, or this had been my last questions. Is Europe today prepared to take the industrial path required for genuine independence from China? But the answer out of our speaking here would be no. To be open, we need the expertise from China to learn from them, to get ourselves, our know-how about sales forward, and then to go a little step into more independence. But independence in the battery sector is not given, I think, so anymore.
Yeah, as we spoke earlier in this call, I think it's very difficult to make it without China. So I think here partnerships with Chinese companies are fundamental to learn to catch up with what they have, and this will require a lot of maturity, of probably also a little bit of being humble and accepting that China has today a lead on this. And that the West will need to learn from China, right? But I think it's the only way. Otherwise, the automotive and here I think the fundamental problem here in the West is the automotive industry, right? The Western automotive industry is doomed today in the EV space if Europe and the US open the gates for China. But also the internal combustion engine industry. Chinese OEMs are producing cars at such a low cost that it will make it really difficult on both sides, on the internal combustion engine side already, but definitely on the EV side. So the best thing the West can do is try to learn and catch up as quickly as possible. But competition is going to be fierce, and I think the industry will radically change.
We don't only have to learn on the cell side of batteries. We also have to learn, just like you said, on the OEM side, to think about cars a different way, to build them up different, and make us more open about technology side of them, if I understand it correct. Or
yeah, and basically understand that Chinese are at the gates, ready to open them. Chinese OEMs, when you see the exports, how they're growing, how they're capturing share in not Europe and the US, but in the rest of the world. This is basically a force that is going to surround the US and Europe. So the car industry, the OEM industry, has an enormous challenge ahead of it. And partnerships will most likely be the only way to survive this.
So on Europe perspective, we're talking about regulated starting prices for getting EVs here into Europe. We are talking about tariffs. We're talking about closing gates. So this doesn't seem to be the right way. It seems more the right way to partner up, just like VW did with XPeng, for example, to get expertise together, if I understand it correctly.
Look, I think there's a social issue. I mean, how many people in Germany alone are employed around the automotive industry, right? I think you, and here, being pragmatic as a politician, I would also close the gates today. But I also realized I cannot keep them closed forever. So what I would think is bring in Chinese companies to partner and produce in Europe, produce in the US. And by doing so, capture that know-how which is has been generated there. That efficiency. This has a lot of social implications as well, right? Europe or the unions in Europe and the US, the automotive unions, will probably have to change if they want to continue having an industry there, right? Efficiencies will be of extreme requirement.
Yeah, this wasn't the lightest talk I ever had, to be fair, but one of the talks I learned the most, to be open, not only about lithium, but also about the whole industry, where we have to take another angle to be there in the next 5 to 10 years, especially on the OEM side. And for my headline, which I take out of it, for batteries, not lithium is the problem, the missing know-how is the problem, and making the most out of it then.
And the scale. Know-how and scale. And this is the chicken or the egg, eh? Look, think about recycling. Eh? In Europe, Europe has been number one for recycling always, uh-huh. But you don't have anything to recycle yet. West China has tons of things to recycle because their industry was so much bigger. And since they're now so efficient in recycling and they have this scale, they're also willing to pay more for the scrap, right? So it's a very difficult position the West is today in this whole space of electromobility, of car OEMs in general, of batteries. Some radical changes need to happen.
Yeah, we will take this out of our talk here. Thank you for your time. Daniel, thank you for the insights which you gave to us and also, yeah, the very interesting angles which we need to look at, especially from the industry, but also from the politician side to make a change if we want to make the change in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Sebastian.
So schnell geht dann auch eine halbe Stunde in einem englischen Podcast über die Bühne. Für mich war es ultra spannend. Ich konnte einiges lernen aus dem Gespräch mit Daniel mitnehmen. Hoffe, das war bei dir auch der Fall. Und ja, hier auch nochmal der Verweis auf das transkribierte Interview, welches wir bei uns auf ERN online gestellt haben. Schau gerne vorbei. Verlinkt ist es auch in den Shownotes. Ansonsten nochmal danke fürs Zuhören und einschalten in der kommenden Woche, wenn die nächste Folge des ERN-Podcasts online geht. Mach's gut. Bis dahin. Ciao.